spooky or fluky? It is a weekly pulse on all things green and gold. It is Weekly Wildy. That's three-time Wisconsin sports writer. You're Jason Wildy. I'm Alex Strofe with you on Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. Jason, are you dressed up? Or I guess I can't tell if that's just a normal outfit.
Oh, I didn't even think. Let me put this microphone down since I'm not doing Wildy and Tausch right now. I didn't even think to dress up for this until I saw you in your onesie.
Yeah, I'm wearing a onesie.
Do you do that a lot or just for Halloween?
I
gotta be honest. I didn't need you to stand up so I could see the pelvic bone on your onesie. Didn't need that. I was good, thanks.
Well, you got it anyway. Do I do it often? No, I do not often wear onesies. I will say, though, I do also own a Santa Claus onesie, and I have worn that in the past for Halloween. So I guess I do have more onesies than the average bird.
I have a Grinch one. Do you want me to go change and come back?
No, I think we're okay without it. You can save that for December if you'd like.
Maybe I'll wear it during Wildy and Tausch. I got to think more in terms of the video medium.
Yeah.
This is not a radio show, so I'll have to. I mean, it is on 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam on the weekend, but yeah, I gotta be more on top of that sort of thing.
There you go. That's all right. We'll let you slide past today. All right, let's start with the quarterback, Jordan Love. Leaves last Sunday's game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, a 30-27 win for the Pack with a groin injury. Malik Willis plays well, gets the job done, but now Love listed as questionable entering this weekend's first-place game at Lambeau Field against the Detroit Lions. Why did you tilt your head? It is a first-place game.
Yeah, he's not listed as questionable. He just didn't practice on Wednesday. I would predict that he will be listed as questionable come Friday.
Come Friday, yeah.
But as we're recording this, he has no designation because they don't do that until the end of the week.
So you're turning your head because I jumped the gun.
No, I'm turning my head because I think you're probably right.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure that, you know, we're not misleading people on the most popular digital-only program across ESPN Wisconsin. Do we do better than that Mr. Irrelevant show with that other guy?
I don't know. We have to go in and dive into the analytics. I'll have our analytics firm look into that for you.
Give me the numbers. I'll talk to 565 about that. No, look, he is undeniably questionable. Maybe he'll be doubtful. Like, we'll have to wait and see. You know, as we're recording this on Thursday morning, you know, I don't know what he's going to do at practice on Thursday. Maybe nothing. Now, he said yesterday that he feels confident that he can play without practicing. That's great. That's easy to say. Harder to do when the game rolls around and you haven't had any reps all week in practice. So I think Thursday is clearly a pivotal day to see if he gets some work. Again, even if he takes part in some form or fashion, we're going to get that stupid limited dance from Matt LaFleur. Which, again, I don't blame him. I would be playing the subterfuge game to the hilt because this is a first-place game and have the Lions trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to have up in our defensive game plan if it's Love, and what do we need to have up in our defensive game plan if it's Malik Willis? So I don't blame him for it, but we're not going to have clarity, I could guarantee you that, on what Love's status is going
to
be.
Okay, so just to go back to the he doesn't have to practice to play conversation. This is the same thing they did earlier in the year when he was dealing with the knee injury, correct?
Correct. And he did have to practice in order to play.
Right, right.
Ultimately.
Yeah, that was the point I was getting to. So do you take them at their word this time around with the groin injury? I mean, obviously he played last week, so it's not like he's knocking off as much rust as he did at the beginning of the season, missing two games. But I find that verbiage hard to trust, given that he had to practice in order to play earlier in the year.
Yeah, I think I would take it as he could play without practicing. That doesn't mean he will play without practicing. Now, again, I would anticipate that he will, and this is, again, as we're recording this, it's about 4 hours before practice even starts. I would predict that he will do something. It may be just limited. Maybe he doesn't go at all today either, and they give him another full day of rest and treatment, and then he does something on Friday to create the possibility of him playing. But look, they have to, in my opinion, they have to give as many first team snaps to Malik Willis as possible, because while he is further along in the offense and his time with the team, you're not beating the Detroit Lions with the game plan you used against the Indianapolis Colts.
Correct.
They are not going to let you hand the ball to Josh Jacobs 32 times and run the ball 50-plus times. They're not going to do it. So we've seen Malik Willis make throws. I mean, look, the game against Jacksonville, he was 5 for 6, and his only incompletion was Romeo Doubs's drop.
Yep.
Like, he was on point. And so let's not completely poo-poo him as a passer. But no, do you want him dropping back 40 times? Definitely not. So, you know, look, the Malik Willis story, I love it. I do. It's a fantastic story. I still think he's holding himself to an impossible standard that Jesus did more than he did. Because I wasn't thinking of, I would compare him to other backup quarterbacks, not the Son of God. That's yeah. Just me.
Hey, that's you. But, that's you, though.
But that's me, you know, Lutheran upbringing. But the bottom line is that I do believe they can win this game with him. I don't think they want to have to try, but I think they're ultimately, in my opinion, you know, as Adam Schefter put it when he was talking with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, in my opinion, the smartest thing to do here, I don't care if it's realistic that he could play, the smartest thing to do here is let Malik Willis play. And if you lose, sucks, but you got another shot at these guys. There's certainly other games where they could stumble that you don't want to stumble. So it is not a season ender if this first place matchup does not go your way.
Yeah, you're right about that, right? If you go into the bye week 6-3, had I told you that ahead of the season, I think most Packers fans feel pretty good about that. Right, you're through 9 games, you're 6-3, and knowing what you knew going into the season is Jordan Love was the best quarterback in the league the second half of last season. Can history repeat itself is to be determined, but you feel comfortable with the idea that Jordan Love kind of eases into things, and that's seemingly how he's been this season as well, right? He's still throwing interceptions, but it seems like he's kind of easing into his rhythm, and he's a rhythm quarterback, it seems, the little we know about Jordan Love as a starter. So I'm not saying I want to lose by any means, but if things were to fall that way, I'd rather be 7-2 than 6-3 headed into the bye. There's still a lot of season left, so you can take peace in that. But I know Packers fans want to win this game. You want to show you're better than the Detroit Lions. Let's go back to Malik Willis, though, for a second, because you mentioned how much you love the story, and I know you wrote a really good one this week in the Wisconsin State Journal. Nobody saw this coming, I don't think. Malik Willis going 3-0 in the 3 games he's asked to play in. He's leading the league in qualified quarterbacks in QBR at 130. Every quarterback that's thrown over 30 pass attempts this year. He's been unbelievably efficient. He hasn't turned the ball over. I actually have some faith that he could win this game. And look, it's got to look different than it did against Indianapolis. But he's done everything Matt LaFleur has asked him to, and he's done it well, which is really impressive for a guy that lots of people were writing off just 2 months ago.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, even though we're not calling this show Get Unpacked or whatever we want to call it.
I think that one already exists, yeah.
Dirty Laundry or something. Anyway, look, first of all, you're right. You don't want to lose this game. No one is saying, you know, we're not suggesting you forfeit, but it's not the end of the world if they do lose. And that's the only message that it look, it does matter. It's going to matter in tie breaking for the division. It's going to matter in tie breaking for playoff seeding. You certainly want to be able to say, hey, we got one in hand against the Lions. So then when you go there the Thursday after Thanksgiving, that one's not feeling like a must win game. It feels like a want to win game. I get all that. Now, that said, the Malik Willis story is remarkable in that he was basically, his NFL career was left for dead coming out of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and by the way, they didn't choose the right quarterback either. Like, you could say that Malik Willis was not their guy, but clearly neither is Will Levis.
True that.
So I don't know how to properly contextualize what he's done. because it has taken a village. Now, he is a major part of that village by playing the way he has. But the bottom line is his coaches, Tom Clements, is a miracle worker with improving guys' footwork and fundamentals. He is. There's no two ways about it.
Right.
And I've seen it with Matt Flynn. I've seen it with Rodgers. Like, he takes guys that are good and makes them better, or he takes guys that are backups and makes them more than serviceable. So he's done that. Matt LaFleur's game plans have accentuated what Malik Willis does best and has allowed him to succeed. He is also surrounded by a bunch of really good offensive weapons. So that helps when you are forced into that, as opposed to going in and playing with, you know, a bunch of schlubs and you're trying to make plays in the passing game when you already have limitations of your own with guys that are also limited. So all those things matter. But the bottom line is he has avoided mistakes. Now, can he do that against the Lions if he has to play? They've got two safeties that have a combined 9 interceptions. Like, can he keep that going? If he can, then there's no doubt they could still win this game. That's the best thing about Malik Willis, is that he has given you reason to hope and believe they can win even without Jordan Love. Now, last thing, to your point about Jordan Love, he was the best quarterback in football during the second half of last season. He has most certainly not been the best quarterback in football during the first 8 games of this season. Like, if you take his 9 games to start the year last year, his 8 regular season games down the stretch where he goes, 18 touchdowns, 1 pick, and then you take his first 8 games, which he misses 2.5 of this season, it has been a roller coaster. I still believe he's a very good quarterback, but he is learning to fly, as Tom Petty would sing. And sometimes, it has not gone well. But I think it's important to remember with him that you're going to be 6-2. You're either going to be 7-2 or 6-3 at the bye. And your starter will have missed 2.5 games at least, or maybe 3.5 games. And he has not played to his capability. That should be good news that they're sitting where they are and that they are going into the much harder second half of their schedule with the hope that he's going to get on track and play like he did last year.
That is eloquently put by you, Jason Wilde.
It's well stated. It's a good point by you.
Yeah. Eloquently put is what I rolled with today, so you didn't give me a hard time, but you gave me a hard time anyway. I think it was Rob Domofsky that said to me earlier this week, you know, you're still winning despite his mistakes, right? And, you know, you can knock Love if you want to for the interceptions, but he's still winning. And you don't want to be playing your best football in October anyway. So even if you are 6-3 going into the bye, you want to be playing your best football in 2 months, not right now against, I mean, obviously, again, you want to beat the Detroit Lions. You want to win all the games you play. That can go ahead unsaid. But you're not playing your best football in October. So, I don't know. It's the ebbs and flows of an NFL season, essentially.
But let's be honest, you also were fortunate in that you didn't have to play your best football against this schedule, right?
I mean, it's the easy part.
Their losses are to the Eagles and the Vikings. Their wins are over the Colts, the Titans, the Rams without their best wide receivers, Arizona, which I know has won back-to-back games on walk-off field goals with the kicker that the Packers probably should have signed earlier, and they could have won more games, including the Minnesota game. And then you've beaten Houston and Jacksonville. I look at that list and I say, I'm impressed with the Houston win out of the 6.
I agree.
But I look at the remaining schedule after the bye, and that you go into the bye playing for first place in your division, after the bye, at Chicago, home against the 49ers, home against the Dolphins, at Detroit, at Seattle, home against the Saints, at the Vikings, home against the Bears. Now, is that a super difficult schedule? No, I'm not saying it is, but the 49ers are getting healthier. Seattle has obviously hit a lull, but I wouldn't rule out them rebounding. At Detroit will not be a picnic, especially since it's not on Thanksgiving, because they can't apparently win at home on Thanksgiving anymore. And are you going to sweep both games with the Bears? And are you going to be able to go into Minnesota like you did a year ago at New Year's Eve and win again. Those are challenging. They cannot win all of those games playing like they did in the first half of the season. No. So that's why they have to be playing much better football. And Jordan Love has to be turning the ball over less to win those games.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. All right, let's go to the defense. Big news this week. Rookie linebacker Edgerrin Cooper named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. He is the first Packers rookie to win that award since Clay Matthews in 2009. Been 15 years since a Packers rookie wins Defensive Player of the Week. He is one of those guys, Jason, seemingly to me, that is just going to force his way onto the field. He made so many plays in that Jacksonville game, got a sack, got a forced fumble, pass deflection, led the team with 8 tackles. He has been really, really impressive, and it just views to me like it's another Goody hit in the second round. What do you make of Edgerrin Cooper's play through the first 8 weeks?
Yeah, he won Defensive Player of the Week, not like Rookie of the Week, like overall Defensive Player of the Week in the NFC. And the Packers ran 57 defensive snaps in that game, and he only played 38 of them. Now, there's a reason why he's playing 38 of them, and that is he is a rookie who still screws up. By his own admission, when we talked to him in the locker room, like, he's still making mistakes, which, by the way, is what rookies do. So I'm not dogging him for it. But he's not at a point where he's an every-down linebacker. Lines up in the wrong spot, and Saquon Barkley runs for a touchdown because of it. He doesn't cover the right guy, and they get a big gain to a tight end in another game. Which is, again, they are more than willing to live with these things, because in the end, he will come out the other side better for it. In the meantime, I mean, the dude made 3 plays. One went completely under the radar because they picked up the 4th down play. But the stop he makes on the 3rd and 1 to wrap up, I think it was Bigsby, Bigsby's a load, man. And he, hogtied him. So you got that play. You got the breakup on the downfield throw to Christian Kirk. And then you've obviously got the strip sack fumble that sets up another touchdown. Like, the dude was a stud. He was a playmaker for them. And if he can continue to have his playmaking go like this and his mistake making go like this, he's going to be exactly the guy you want. Like, frankly, he's kind of been the guy that you were hoping Quay Walker would be.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
And if you can get Quay Walker to be more like the Quay Walker you were hoping he would be, now you're starting to look at having a linebacker tandem that is like the Fred Warner, all these tandems that we've seen from the 49ers or the Buccaneers. Like, there's been teams that have really good 2 linebackers that when they go nickel, both those guys can cover, they can rush, they can tackle, everything. So again, I don't know. Dre Greenlaw, who's the other one? He's injured, right? He tore his Achilles coming off the sideline in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's what you want. That's the image that you want. And that's what Saleh had when he was the defensive coordinator in San Francisco. And that's what Jeff Hafley, who
worked there at the time. Say it. Say it. That's what Robert Saleh could have in Green Bay. Say it.
No, he works with the offense.
Oh, excuse me. That's right. Excuse me. for how good of a team this is and how high the expectations were and are for this team this season, it's still been impressive to see the way rookies are contributing, right? Especially defensively. Obviously, we just went over Edgerrin Cooper. And Evan Williams is a big one. He left that game last week with a hamstring injury. But he seems like another one of those dudes that I was just, calling, forcing himself on the field, becoming an every-down safety. Evan Williams. So impressive what some of these rookies have been able to do defensively for a team that has championship expectations. It's not often you see that.
No, you don't. And look, to me, I understand the initial injury report of the week was not great, Bob, right? 60% of your offensive line, your starting quarterback, your starting running back, your 2-time second team All-Pro cornerback, your rookie safety, none of them practicing. It's not what you want for your first place showdown with your NFC North rivals. I fully expect all those offensive linemen to play. I have no doubt that Josh Jacobs will play. We talked to him yesterday. Lots of players say they're going to play. I think we can trust Josh Jacobs on this one. But Evan Williams is the injury that we are not talking about enough. He has clearly become a vital piece of their defense. And the idea of, you know, and here's the thing why I don't think he's going to play this week. Matt LaFleur told us in a moment of injury honesty that he had the hamstring was bothering him before the game. And Evan Williams said, I'm playing. And he did. And then it becomes a problem and he's not able to finish the game. 4-3 and outs to start the game. Then you lose Evan Williams and suddenly now the Jaguars are able to get a little something going. So, you know, the results are the results. And that would tell me that he's an important piece to have on the field because as LaFleur prefers the term chain reaction, I prefer domino effect, but whatever you want to call it, Evan Williams goes out, you got to move a bunch of guys around in your secondary, and it was not as effective. So we will see, but I would not anticipate him playing. Soft tissue injury, you miss this game, you get the bye, you've got him back for Chicago potentially. That's what I think is more likely the case with Love personally, but again, we'll have to wait and see with him.
All right, four downs time. I've got four questions. Jason doesn't know what's coming.
Yes.
He will give us our brutal honesty.
No.
He is referring, of course, to a different game. That's yes or no, which you can hear. About an hour and a half to Green Bay game day, our pregame show. So about 1:30 this Sunday, you can catch yes or no with Jason Wilde on Green Bay game day. Let's start with first down. Happy Halloween, which I think I already wished you. Candy corn, yes or no?
No. I mean, I don't understand the level of vitriol directed at candy corn. Like it's fine. Like if there's a package of it, I probably will eat a few of them, but I can tell you this, I wouldn't recommend eating an entire bag of it, but it's not as terrible as people say, but it's not, if you have lots of candy options to steal from your kids' basket, that would be toward the bottom of the list.
Compare candy corn to an NFL player all time.
Candy corn to a player, boy.
Yeah,
it'd be helpful to have these types of questions ahead of time.
Well, you said it gets more vitriol than it deserves, so that made me go, okay, that you could probably be describing a player the same way.
Yeah, I'll circle back on that.
Okay, we'll come back to it before we wrap up the show. Let's go to second down. The Detroit Lions obviously are the cream of the crop the last couple of years in the NFC North. We throw the term rival around because they're in the division, but where do the Lions actually stack up in terms of Packers rivals? Are they actually top three?
They were so same old Lions for so long. Like, I'm not even sure. And again, I don't want to speak for fans. So however fans view it is one thing. I'm saying in terms of like, to me, a rivalry is what's on the line for the team and how do the players view it, right? And when you got Aaron Rodgers yelling, I own you, I still own you in Chicago, and you got Matt LaFleur 10-0 against the Bears, like, yeah, it's a rivalry for the fans, no doubt. And, you know, I love, you know, Waddle and Sylvie getting after me and vice versa. But that ain't a rivalry. That's why I want Caleb Williams to be good. So it is a rivalry, and you don't know who's going to win every time they face each other. But the Lions are kind of in the same boat, right? Like, there was that period where they, like, hadn't won in Wisconsin in, like, 20-some years. So I love the fact that this is competitive now, and each team won a game last year, and that could be the case again this year, and they could face each other in the playoffs. So now is it a rivalry this season? Yeah, it is. Has it been historically? Not for a long time. The Vikings were the one that, you know, throughout the 2000s, it was back and forth. And then Favre went there. And then it was a really intense rivalry. So that's their San Francisco is clearly a rival, especially with you know, to the degree that Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan, I don't know if they're okay now, but they certainly weren't for a while there. So that was a rivalry, undeniably. So I would say those were the top two. And then beyond that, you know, it's kind of a mishmash of different teams that have been kind of in the mix.
Yeah, Seattle and Dallas are the other two that come to mind over the last 15 or so years. But anyway, yeah, I this one will certainly become one, I think, it looks like. Dan Campbell versus Matt LaFleur seems like it will be a passionate rivalry for at least the next half decade, if not longer, here in the NFC North. Let's go to third down. This is something I asked you last night on the Homer Hour, so you've been able to stew on this one. But I'm going to ask you again because it's something I think a lot of fans are looking at. With the NFL trade deadline coming up on Tuesday and a bunch of contenders in the NFL making moves, Chiefs, Bills, Dan Campbell jumping up and down at his press conference indicates the Lions may make a move. The Vikings have made a move. Should the Packers make a move ahead of the deadline to avoid being left behind by some of the other contenders in the NFL that are making moves?
Yeah, this is, you know, as we talked about on the Homer Hour, like there's a two-pronged thing going on here, right? Like if there's a guy that's available that A, helps you at a position of need, and B, blocks, say, the Lions from getting the guy. You know, the guy we talked about is Trey Hendrickson, right? With the Bengals, had 17 sacks a couple years ago. Packers need to upgrade their front four pass rush. The Lions need to replace Aiden Hutchinson. He seems to be the guy, and I don't know if Mike Brown's willing to trade him or not, but he seems to be the guy who requested a trade in April, I might add, from the Cincinnati Bengals. That would make sense. Well, if you get him, not only does that mean that you upgrade your team, but you prevent Dan Campbell from upgrading his team. So I don't know if that's their target or if it's Myles Garrett, or I have no idea who the Lions are jumping up and down for joy with. But the bottom line is that that would be a double whammy. You help yourself and you prevent your stiffest competition in the division from helping themselves. I think they could use a corner. I think they could use a defensive line. Are they going to? I would recommend that Goody take the approach that I take on eBay. Bargains. I'm not giving up the girls' college fund to get a Robin Yount bobblehead that I've wanted. Like, don't do it. Like, you do have a good enough team as constructed. Now, are injuries going to hit? And is that going to get harder? I don't know. I don't talk about injuries the way my partner does on Wilde and Tausch and puts the whammy on them. The bottom line is that you've got a good enough team as currently constructed to get to the Super Bowl. You're going to need some things to fall your way. You're going to need to stay healthy. Your quarterback's going to have to play like he did last half of last season, but it's there. But could you use some help? Undeniably. They definitely could. But I would not give up. You know, I always think back to the Chase Claypool trade that didn't happen. Like, the Packers offered a second-round pick for him. So did the Bears. They took the Bears' offer because they thought the Bears would have a worse record than the Packers, and they would get a higher draft pick. It turned out to be pretty close, right, in 2022. But you give up that second-round pick, you might not have Jaden Reed on your team.
Right,
now.
Right.
So, and Chase Claypool stinks. He stinks. I mean, that's the best trade they didn't make. So have there been other trades that would have helped them? Absolutely. But I would not give up premium draft, especially the way Goody's on a heater drafting guys. I would not give up important draft capital at the trade deadline.
I don't think Chase Claypool fits the criteria for the candy corn question I asked. I think he actually deserves
it. No, I'll tell you the guy that fits it, and I say this because I love him, one, and two, he's our teammate, but Jared Bush is the answer.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Bush took a whole lot of grief. Dude had an interception in the Super Bowl. He helped them win a title. He was a stalwart on special teams, but when he would have to play in the nickel, people were very critical of him. Well, He knew his role, and if he was forced into that role, he came through sometimes. But, you know, he got, as a player, he was another one. He was one of those guys that fans were tough on. And I thought of him immediately, and I spent this time mulling whether or not I wanted to say that, because he's our friend and he's our teammate. And he had a very good NFL career. He carved out an impressive career for a guy who was undrafted out of Utah State and picked up on waivers by the Packers in 06 at the end of camp. But he is a guy that fans were unfairly vitriolic toward, in my opinion.
That's actually a really good answer. My head did not go there. You know, okay. Interesting. Yeah, you're a great point. Great point on the fact he helped win them a Super Bowl, right? He almost had a second interception in that Super Bowl, by the way. That fourth down final offensive play for Pittsburgh. All right, fourth down. Quantify this however you want, because I'm struggling with it. I know it's a big game this weekend, right? It's a divisional game. They're all big. But how big do you think this game really is in the grand scheme of things this season? Could it be the difference between being a 5 seed and a 6 seed? Could it be the difference between winning the division and losing the division in your mind? Because I know there's a lot of season left, a lot of ball game left, as people say. But this feels big.
Of course it could be. Of course it could be. But we have no, I do not have a crystal ball. Maybe you do, along with your skeleton onesie. But the fact of the matter is I'm looking at the Lions' schedule now. They play after this. They play at Houston. By the way, they've had their bye, really early bye for them. So they play at San Francisco the second to last week of the season. They play Buffalo, which seems to be playing pretty well. They have both of their matchups with the Bears, which again, they're not the same old Bears, although they sure look like it with Tariq Stevenson talking trash instead of covering a Hail Mary. But the Lions have some work to do now. And so they could lose some games, and they could lose a game or two that they're not supposed to lose. So could the Packers. But, like, yes, it matters, and tiebreakers and everything else. But the bottom line is, you know, Natasha Bedingfield, the rest is still unwritten. And you could lose this game and still win the division. You could lose this game and still get the number one seed in the NFC. So it is a game you want to win. It is a game you would love to win. It is not a game you absolutely, positively have to win. It is not a must-win game. Now, if this game was the season finale instead of the Bears, and you're facing the same groin injury, not play, don't play, Jordan Love, all that other stuff, let's have a different conversation. But there's so much else that can happen between now and January 5th that I'm going to try and steal a game somewhere else if Jordan Love is iffy, because I do not want a soft tissue injury with the bye week coming up to go from being a one-week injury and miss one game to missing this, getting hurt in this game, having the bye, which isn't enough for him to heal, and then missing two more games coming out of the bye. And now time is short. The hourglass has only 6 games left in it, or 5 games left in it when you get him back. That's me. But again, I have not looked at his MRI. I've not checked his groin. So I don't know. But to me, be smart here, because this is not the end-all, be-all game of the 2024 Green Bay Packers season.
That's perspective. That is how we will wrap up the show. That is perspective. I'm not saying that. That is Jason Wilde, 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year. You can hear him each and every weekday, 9 to noon on Wilde and Tausch. You can hear him on Green Bay Game Day and every other show ESPN Wisconsin has, including right here on Weekly Wilde. You can also follow him on Twitter at Jason J. Wilde and read him in the Wisconsin State Journal. Good story on Malik Willis this week. What's your Sunday story?
Jeff Hafley.
Got it. Got it.
And how good his defense will have to be against this offense, but how impressive his defense has been in the first 8 weeks. I feel like we should do this show, like, since you're a cheapskate and you use the free version of Zoom.
Yeah.
I think we should all, instead of ending the show, like, you know, take care, be good, or whatever it might be, I think we should always just go up to the deadline and just it ends where it ends.
Yeah, I disagree with that, but I appreciate your executive producer input. But if you want to stall for the next 140 seconds, you be my guest.
No, that's fine. Hey, it's your show, man. It is my name on the marquee, but that's fine. You know, it's cool. I don't like that my name is on the marquee.
Yeah,
so
you do.
No, I definitely don't. But I will say this as my kind of parting thought. I know that you are wired as a fan.
I am.
And I am wired as a professional journalist.
Well, the professional part is questionable, but go on.
Really? I was about to say a bunch of nice stuff about you and how what great chemistry we have on the show and how much I've enjoyed it. But now forget you. I'm not going to say any of that stuff.
Well, you said it by not saying it. I really enjoy this as well, and I appreciate your insights and everything. But yeah, I'm wired as a fan. So this Love or Willis debacle, it's probably sad how much space it's taken up in my brain the last 3 days. But that's how I'm wired, and that's okay. I'm really looking forward to this game no matter who plays quarterback, though, because I think it's a good measuring stick game as well, right? It tells you you are at this point in the season versus who I view as the best team in the NFL. I know the Chiefs are undefeated, but I think the Lions are better than them on paper. So that's my take on it. All right, Jason, take care. Be good.
Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again next Thursday. It's Weekly Wildy on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channel and on Saturday mornings, 14:30, ESPN Beaver Dam. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.